Our second case is In Re JT. For the appellant, Mr. Magella.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honor.
Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I'm Gordon Magella for the appellant, JT. Your Honor, if I may reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal at this time.
Counsel, before you even get started, I have a question and a clarification.
Yes,
I found it very. I found the record in this case to be extremely confusing, and specifically on the point of what was the charge, what was the specific charge, how was it amended, and which part of the statute are we really talking about here?
So, it's very interesting because this case was originally charged as a fourth degree felony carrying a concealed weapon. The language in the complaint was amended at an earlier hearing to include the word handgun.
Well, not just to include it, deleted deadly weapon and added handgun other than a dangerous ordnance.
Exactly. And the date of the trial, the trial prosecutor amended the level of the complaint to a first degree misdemeanor, but didn't actually amend the language of the complaint.
So why would we be talking about deadly weapon here at the Supreme Court?
Well, that's how the First District decided the case. And that quite frankly is how you ended up with the case as it is now. The First District decided this as a deadly weapon under, I believe, subsection A1 of the CCW statute.
Magistrate Kissinger made that finding.
He did make that finding, yes.
Well, if it was, as Justice French points out, the deletion of deadly weapon and the addition of a handgun other than a dangerous ordnance, how did Magistrate Kissinger make a finding of guilt being proven beyond a reasonable doubt that the weapon was inoperable but capable of being used as a deadly weapon and adjudicate delinquency on that basis? How did that occur?
I don't know. I agree entirely that they are defects.
Yeah, these are all things that are good for you.
Yes. Yeah. No. They are. I honestly handled this case from the objection forward, and I never knew quite what to do with that because obviously there had been a finding that it was a deadly weapon. The state proceeded under this theory that the inoperable pistol was still a deadly weapon, but the complaint I think was facially defective. I guess my view to all of you would be, well, we're here on the proposition of law as it was decided by the First District. Despite the defective complaint and the defective amendment to the complaint,
I think it's good. Shouldn't we go back to find out whether or not there's been a finding of guilt on what the accused was charged with? Seems to me there hasn't been a finding on that.
Well,
we found him guilty of something he wasn't charged with.
We could, I suppose. We could remand it for a rehearing on that and go through the whole trial process.
Well, the
again.
Deadly weapon wasn't a finding of the trial court. It was a finding of the trial court based on something that the defendant wasn't accused of.
I agree entirely.
Well, there was no evidence to support. I think the confusion here, at least for me, is that the gun was determined to be inoperable.
Yes.
And then they switched their theory to, well, it's not going to shoot a bullet, but you could use it to bludgeon somebody to death.
Yes.
And so because you could use, even though there was no evidence that it was even remotely attempted to be used that way.
Yes.
In fact, it was only, I believe, brandished, was it not? Or did he do that?
There was no direct testimony that he brandished it. There was, I think, inadmissible testimony as to the officer's, or at least inadmissible for the truth of the matter, that the officer had gotten a radio call from a citizen who had said a group of teenagers were displaying this weapon. The officer only ever saw it in his waistband, and obviously after he'd taken it out.
Right, but there was no evidence that it was being used to threaten or brandish,
absolutely.
Bludgeon anybody.
Absolutely.
I mean,
Yes.
A lot of things can be used, and their primary purpose would be to bludgeon somebody. They're not inoperable for their, you know, initial purpose, and then, you know, the alternative theory is you could beat somebody to death with it.
Yes.
So is that really, and that permeates both the trial court and the appellate court's analysis, does it not?
It does. I think where the first district decided this, they essentially decided that this pistol, this inoperable pistol, was originally designed as a weapon, and even though it's lost its design function, because it could still be deadly under the theory that it could be a bludgeon. But again, Chief Justice, as you pointed out, anything can be a bludgeon. I'm sure all of you have objects in front of you now that are far heavier than this pistol that, again, could be a bludgeon. So I think what the First District said is that it started life as a firearm. It started life as being basically per se a deadly weapon. And obviously, you know, that's kind of in the statute that a handgun is basically effectively per se a deadly weapon. It's lost its design function. To the First District, that doesn't matter. And Chief Justice, I think you've kind of made that point that it's lost that function. Okay, so then what? I think that the better rule, the rule that the First District should have taken, and the rule that I would ask all of you to adopt, is that once something has lost its designed function as a weapon, once it's no longer a firearm as it was perhaps designed to be, it actually has to be possessed, carried, or used as a weapon. It actually has to be deadly in the manner in which it's used.
You would have no argument if he would have picked that up and taken it by the muzzle and started to hit somebody with the handle.
Absolutely. There are any number of cases that I think both sides have cited in the briefs where inoperable guns, BB guns, starter pistols, plugged pistols have actually been used in the commission of robberies and other offenses where they've been used as a weapon. And I have no qualms with this potentially being a deadly weapon if it's actually used as a weapon.
But, counsel, you're looking at 29-2311A, correct? Is that what you want us to look at, that specific language of the statute that defines deadly weapon? Do you want us to do
yes.
that?
I mean,
because you have two, it's alternative. You first have to show the instrument capable of inflicting death.
Yes.
And then either that it was designed or adapted for use as a weapon, or that it was possessed, carried, or used as a weapon.
Yes.
So, you know, it's a complex definition here. And what are you saying? Because it was inoperable, where does it fall apart? Where does the inoperability of the gun fall within this definition?
What I would say is, I would say that this statute probably has two requirements, and the second one has kind of an A and B part. So the first requirement is that it's capable of inflicting death. And I think we could say that in the sense that any object that has any kind of meaningful weight is capable of being used as a bludgeon.
So that's not at issue. The fact that it was inoperable does not make it not capable.
In the sense that a baseball bat,
okay.
Probably even my pen could be used as a bludgeon. Anything could be used as a bludgeon. Where I think the First District's decision falls is that you have that second part, kind of the A and B, that it either has to be designed or specifically adapted as a weapon, or it has to be possessed, carried, or used as a weapon.
Well, Wasn't it designed as a weapon?
Well, and that's what the First District said. It was designed as a weapon. And what I'm saying is it's lost that essence. It maybe it used to be a weapon, but it isn't anymore.
But he did carry it. He did carry it thinking that it was a weapon. It was loaded. He was showing it off to his colleagues. He was probably very much surprised that it was inoperable. I don't think that, that your client thought that it was inoperable.
He might not have. I don't think that's really relevant here. B, I think that there are other explanations for what's going on in this situation. We have a group of kids. You know, he very well could have been carrying this for a while to use as a weapon. He very well could have been the kid in this group of kids who was left holding the bag, as it were, when the police showed up and happened to be the one who had it in his hands for 30 seconds and was the one with it found on him. I mean, what we have in the trial testimony is really just this limited police encounter where there's a pat-down conducted of him, where it's found in his waistband. So the only evidence really was that this was situated in his waistband.
Counsel, I guess I'm having a problem here. The juvenile was found guilty of carrying a concealed weapon?
Yes.
And the police officer testified, well, while it didn't work, it could be used to hit somebody? Is that essentially what the police officer said?
Basically, yes.
So while it doesn't work, it could be used to hit somebody, so therefore you're carrying a concealed weapon?
I think that's basically the argument, yes. And I think that fails, because again, I think if you're going to go down that path, then anything can be used, and any heavy object can be used as a bludgeon.
But aren't you taking issue with the definition? Because the definition doesn't talk about operability of a firearm.
Right.
So, you know, that's my concern. The way the statute is written is rather broad for deadly weapon. It doesn't say, it says capable of inflicting death, and that's where I thought you originally were going. Saying that because it was not operable, it wasn't capable of inflicting death, but you're saying because of the bludgeoning effect.
I think that it should be, I think that the rule should be capable of inflicting death as actually used, because again we have something that theoretically was designed as a firearm, theoretically designed to be deadly by firing a projectile. I think by all accounts, it's lost that essence. It can't do that. It's lost that designed function. So if it's actually going to be deadly, it needs to be deadly in the means that it's used. It's not used as a bludgeon.
But I guess what Justice Lansinger is trying to direct you towards is that pesky word or.
Yes.
It just seems to be in the middle of that statute, and it says or carried as a weapon. This young man thought he was carrying a weapon, didn't he?
I don't think so. I at least don't think there's proof in the
record. He took it out of his pocket and brandished it and showed it to people. He didn't think he was carrying a weapon?
Again, I think what we have in the record is a very limited encounter between an officer and a young man, and the only real evidence is that it was found on his person. It wasn't used in the commission of another offense. He didn't threaten anyone with it.
But it was loaded.
It was, yes.
Okay, that would logically point to the fact that somebody thought that gun, when they put bullets in it, was going to be capable of firing.
I mean, theoretically, yes. But, I mean, the point is that it wasn't.
It wasn't fired.
It wasn't fired.
There's no discussion or nothing in the record to say that there was an attempt to fire it at any time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, as I said earlier, there was probably nobody more surprised than JT that this was inoperable.
Again, it may have been, he may have been the kid who was left holding the bag when they were all showing this around. He may have had.
What difference does that make?
I think if we're going to proceed under a theory of he intended to use it as a weapon, well, I think we need more here than.
You don't think the mere possession of a loaded gun, even though subsequently it was determined to be inoperable, the fact that it was in his waistband loaded is indication that it was carried to be used as a gun?
I don't believe that it's sufficient proof that he intended to use it as a weapon. And again,
So are you saying the state would have to prove in every case, if the issue is, was this a deadly weapon, the state would have to prove a test firing that the gun actually fired?
No. I mean, there is already, and I would point you back to this court's decision in Murphy 25 years ago, that you can have other evidence that the firearm is actually operable. And if the firearm is operable, then it's a handgun. It falls under that subsection.
But you're requiring the state to prove operability, even though the statute doesn't require it.
If we're going to proceed under the theory that it's a firearm, yes, they absolutely have to prove operability by some
counsel,
means.
So we're here on a sufficiency challenge.
Yes.
It's not manifest weight. So doesn't that matter? At this stage, the state doesn't have to prove anything.
Yes.
They only have to show sufficient evidence.
Yes. And I'm saying in this case, I guess it doesn't matter. I mean, the whole theory was that it was inoperable to begin with. And I'm sorry, Justice Lansinger, perhaps I've misunderstood your question.
I'm just looking, if we were to rule in your favor, what would we be saying with respect to how deadly weapon is proved in other cases? And it sounds like you're saying that the operability of the weapon is necessary, which to me is contrary to what the statute says.
The operability of the weapon is necessary for it to be a firearm, and there's a separate, you know, and essentially the legislature has made that per se a deadly weapon. It precludes the concealed carrying of a handgun. But this isn't a handgun, and I think everyone would concede it's not a handgun. So the question is it still a deadly weapon? Does it still fall under that other subsection? And I would say that if the weapon is not operable, the state has to prove that the defendant used it in some fashion as a weapon. That again, the state, if it's used as part of a robbery or in some way used as a weapon, they can still prove that it's a weapon, but just possessing it without more, you really, again, if they're under the theory that it's a bludgeon, somebody has to try to be bludgeoned. That's kind of that simple. I see my time has concluded. I would yield unless there are any more questions. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Ms. Curran.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. I think there are two things that are at issue in this case. One is whether the gun that was possessed by the child was a deadly weapon under the statute, the A portion of the statute for the weapons definition. And the second is whether a firearm that has been manufactured as a firearm is per se a deadly weapon. I know this court took in the question of whether it's per se a deadly weapon, so I want to address that first. In this case, we have a child carrying a high-point 9mm handgun. It was inoperable when the officers actually recovered it and tried to test fire it. There's nothing in the record to explain why it's inoperable. The gun was not checked with the coroner's office. I don't know if it was simply that the firing pin had been pushed out of place, which I've had on other cases, or anything of that nature. But it was certainly manufactured as a firearm.
So in when we're talking about whether it's a firearm, operability is, in fact, an issue of a particular firearm.
Yes. Okay. Under a firearm, as far as a firearm specification, anything like that, it has to be operable. There's clear case law on that point, or at least if a gun's not recovered and proven to be actually operable through a test firing or something of that nature, there has to be circumstantial evidence indicating that it was an operable firearm.
And that's pursuant to the statutory language.
To the statutory language, as well as case law. There's significant case law.
So this is not a gun. This is not a firearm.
This is not
a weapon that is inoperable.
It's inoperable.
Is not a firearm under the statute.
Unless it can be readily rendered operable. In this
but
case, there's no evidence
so
of that.
So we move on then
Correct.
To the deadly weapon
Correct.
Definition, which is an instrument or device or thing capable of inflicting death and designed or specifically adapted for use as a weapon or possessed, carried, or used as a weapon, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, so you're kind of bootstrapping that it was initially designed specially adapted for use as a weapon. It was initially designed as a weapon.
Yes, it was.
As a firearm weapon.
It was.
Not as a bludgeoning weapon.
Well, the firearm in this case was there was testimony by the officer that it was a heavy object. It was blunt. It certainly could have been used as a bludgeon.
It wasn't designed to be a bludgeoning instrument.
I don't have testimony that it was designed that way. I don't have any testimony showing that it wasn't. This isn't a case where we have a plastic firearm that was manufactured
through a 3D printer.
Okay, but
I think we can use our collective intelligence here to figure out that this was, you know, designed to shoot a projectile to cause that.
Clearly,
that harm and not. I've got a loaded 9mm, and I'm going to come up and hit you over the head with it.
I'm not saying that there's anything proving that it could have also been manufactured for use as a bludgeon if
need be.
Okay,
so let's go back to the definition. A deadly weapon is any instrument, device, or thing capable of inflicting death and designed or specially adapted for use as a weapon. Okay, I see a disconnect there in an inoperable gun fitting into that part of the definition. The other part is or possessed, carried, or used as a weapon. It's still a stretch.
In this case, with these facts, I think in this case, when you have a juvenile who, when officers approach, is evasive towards them, would not face them, had his arms pulled up in his sweatshirt, refused to talk to them, finally did so over his shoulder, and eventually put his arms through his shirt and turned and had it concealed in his waistband and it was fully loaded, I think it seems pretty obvious that it, to me, just my own initial reaction, is that it was being carried as a weapon.
Well, it was being carried as a weapon because he didn't know it was inoperable. There's a big difference there.
He may not have known it was inoperable. I agree.
That's not going to get you. If what you're saying is that he was carrying it as a weapon, mm-hmm. it was fully loaded, it was tucked in his waistband, readily in hand, et cetera, and he thought it was operable, if you think that's going to get you to where you want to be, then I think you need to say that that makes it a firearm, which is in contradiction to the statute.
No, I'm not arguing that this is a firearm. We didn't have to prove that in this case. The charge was initially filed as a felony in the fourth degree because it was believed initially, I think, to be a firearm. It was amended to a misdemeanor.
Counsel, since we're on that point,
yes.
I have to take issue with that.
Yes.
Because I think the defense counsel starts out and says, defense counsel says, I'm going to file Rule 29 motion. We're still here under the felony. Then the prosecutor says, well, we agreed ahead of time to amend it to a misdemeanor.
Correct.
But the prosecutor never says what charge we're talking about. There's no specific amendment. Before the trial started, we did agree to amend it to a misdemeanor of the first degree. Maybe I should have said that we should amend it to the misdemeanor language, but the language was never included on the record.
The language at trial that the magistrate considered, because it had been amended at the hearing beforehand, was to a handgun other than a dangerous ordinance. Under the statute, a handgun is any firearm that's capable of being used single-handedly. In this case, it was initially a firearm that was a handgun. It had a short enough stock. It's a semi-automatic weapon. When they went to trial, they did amend it to a misdemeanor. It still, under the definition, was designed as a firearm and is a handgun under that. And a firearm in this case is still a deadly weapon per se under the statute.
Ms. Curran, I'm confused at your response because Justice French has pointed out that on March 27th, the amendment was to a handgun other than a dangerous ordinance.
Correct.
Are you suggesting it was subsequently re-amended on the day of trial?
It was. The magistrate amended it in the record to a misdemeanor charge.
Well, and the transcript would indicate, and on the carrying concealed weapon, the prosecutor's indicating the gun is inoperable, which would not make it a felony offense, making it potentially a misdemeanor of the first degree.
Correct.
Mr. Bouchard, no, Your Honor, the court, okay, I will make an entry note. The amendment to the misdemeanor of the first degree under the statute, and my understanding that we're going to trial on the carrying concealed weapon as a misdemeanor of the first degree.
Correct.
But Justice French points out, it's not denominated under which code section or which definitional section of the first-degree misdemeanor it was tried.
There's only two ways that a charge could be a misdemeanor under
carrying concealed. A1 and A2?
Yes, and the A1 is a deadly weapon, and the A2 is simply if the firearm is unloaded or if it were perhaps inoperable.
Doesn't the accused have the right to know which of those he's being prosecuted for?
The point of a complaint is to give them, a defendant, notice of what it is he's been charged with, and I think in this case he knows he's been charged with a carrying concealed weapon for having an inoperable
firearm.
But
he doesn't know which section, right?
Well, I in all honesty, I don't know in this case that it mattered that much whether it was considered a handgun or a deadly weapon in this case. I mean,
under A2, it would be a misdemeanor.
It was a misdemeanor under
A2.
Either way, it's a misdemeanor. Yes, Your Honor. In this case, because the gun was not loaded, and in this case, it wasn't even operable. Either way, it would be, if it were still considered a handgun, it would be a misdemeanor.
Where does it fit if instead of carrying an inoperable gun, it was a toy gun, but it looked, you know, the realistic look of a weapon. Where does that fall in the scheme of things?
It wouldn't be a carrying concealed weapon charge at all. I don't think a toy gun satisfies the statute for a deadly weapon or anything else that would have been characterized. It's not a firearm. It's not a handgun. It's not a dangerous ordinance. It's a toy in that situation. It doesn't satisfy any of the elements of what is prohibited in a carrying concealed weapon charge. And under the deadly weapon, a toy gun is not capable of inflicting death.
Are you arguing that the prosecutor then could have convicted this accused of either a deadly weapon other than a handgun or a handgun other than a dangerous ordinance, because they're both misdemeanors?
They would both potentially be misdemeanors. In this case, I think it was obvious that they were going forward on likely just the deadly weapon, which even if it's a handgun in this case, it still satisfies as a deadly
what
weapon.
What do you do with the deletion of the deadly weapon
to the amendment?
27.
Well, that was because
specifically the amended complaint to delete deadly weapon.
And it was to add in at that point when the prosecutor, I think, believed it to be an operable firearm at that point, the firearm element, which is the handgun.
The prosecutor, you said, believed it to be inoperable?
Believed it to be operable. That was before trial. That was so far in advance of when they had all the evidence with the officer. And their testimony.
So actually what is important is what happened once it was determined to be inoperable.
Correct.
Not what they thought of, you know, what the
Correct.
Pretrial on the record was before.
Correct.
The state was incapable of proving that it was a handgun other than a dangerous ordinance, is what you're saying.
The only way that it...
Is that true or not?
Yeah, well, yes. In this
case... All right,
case,
so the only thing that the prosecution could have proven was the deadly weapon other than the handgun.
Correct.
But that's not anywhere in the transcript, and there's no journal entry to that effect. We only see the finding of the magistrate guilty of that offense.
Well, the magistrate amended it to the misdemeanor, and the judge only considered it as whether it was a deadly weapon. It was a, you know, it's up to the court to decide whether they want to look at it as being, you know, still a handgun. It's not operable at
this
point.
Well, the connect here or disconnect in the reading of the statute, which I'm unsure of, is that it's not considered a firearm, so it can only be considered a deadly weapon.
Right.
And then the last part of the statute says it has to be possessed, carried, or used as a weapon. Does that relate to it has to be possessed, carried, or used as a weapon under its current capabilities? You mean
right.
As a bludgeoning instrument, or let's go back to the original characteristic of this object, and it has to be possessed, carried, or used as a weapon, in this case, as a firearm, when it's clearly not a firearm.
So what I think, I just want to make sure I'm clear, I'm understanding your question, is whether the design also has to be how it was being used.
Yes.
Okay. That's not part of what's required under the statute. In Marshall, I think it was the 10th District, had actually said that the only thing that courts need to decide is whether the gun is capable of inflicting death. And in this case, this gun, even though it's inoperable, is capable still of inflicting death by being used as a bludgeon. And whether it's either designed or has been used, carried, or possessed as a deadly weapon. There's an either or in that way. And in this case, the gun was designed for use as a deadly weapon.
So you go back to its first characteristic or its intended use, And you bootstrap that.
Well, it's not, I don't think, with all due respect, I don't think it's bootstrapping when the statute says it has to be an and of either the design or carried, used, or possessed. I mean, it's not both. It doesn't.
But if we were to take your theory and the First District's theory, there no longer will be a requirement in Ohio that a weapon ever be operable. Because they can all be used as a bludgeon, can they not? All weapons?
I don't know that you would be able to do that without actual testimony about the characteristics
of the weapon
that's being used.
But that's what the police officer and the First District Court of Appeals did here. They said, this weapon doesn't work, but if you hit somebody over the head with it, it works.
With all due respect, Your Honor, I don't know that that's all that they said. In this case, the officer testified specifically that it was still capable of inflicting death by being used as a bludgeon.
My question. Isn't that true of every weapon in the world?
Not to my knowledge.
Really?
I don't know how somebody would use a small, you know, pocket knife, even if it has a switchblade, as a bludgeon necessarily. It's not a large, heavy object.
But that's my fear, is once we go to the bludgeon standard, now courts don't really have to worry about operability, do they?
I think things still have to be designed as a deadly weapon, or carried, used, or possessed as a deadly weapon under the statute. Firearms are distinct in this manner because there's really no use for them other than as a weapon.
So there's no testimony that he was using, that he was carrying this, that he possessed, carried, or used this weapon as a bludgeon. Is that true?
There's no testimony he did it, no.
Okay. And there is ample testimony that he couldn't have fired this weapon.
There is testimony it's not operable, correct. It does not work to fire a projectile.
So I'm still confused on, without testimony that he intended to use this as a bludgeon, how did he possess, carry, or use the inoperable gun as a weapon?
I think that first of all, I don't know that that was required to be proven, because it's either, it has to be capable of inflicting death, and then either designed for use as a deadly weapon, which a firearm in this case was still capable of inflicting death as a bludgeon, but was designed for inflicting death as a firearm, or it has to have been carried, used, or possessed as a deadly weapon. In this case, with any firearm, whether it's operable or inoperable, I don't know that there's any purpose for carrying it other than for use as a weapon, whether it's for protection, whether it's to intimidate others during a robbery, or whether it's for, you know, somebody to actually use it to shoot at people. A firearm doesn't have any use other than as a weapon. The defendant's, you know, position that the Civil War relics, cannonballs, which aren't weapons in and of themselves in the first place, they're just projectiles, those types of items, a disarmed grenade, they're not items that have no other use than as a weapon. Those are obviously historical artifacts that are collected by people and could be carried or used for some purpose other than use as a weapon.
You think that's what distinguishes them? Is that they could be in, out of a collector's cabinet?
I think that's a difference between those items and a per se finding on a firearm, because there is no other reason for somebody to have a handgun other than for use as a weapon.
But that isn't part of the statute either.
It's not a requirement, but it's certainly a distinction for why, you know, a firearm is distinct. It's distinctly separated underneath the code as well.
What about hunting? Hunting is a use of a firearm.
Usually not a
target
a
practice.
Handgun.
Target practice is a use of a firearm. So I'm carrying, a concealed, under these circumstances, and I'm on my way to the range.
Well, I mean, for a juvenile, it's obviously not somebody who's likely doing that.
Well, we don't know. You can't speculate like that.
There's an opportunity, yes, that it could be used for target practice.
That kind of undercuts your argument.
I suppose if the court sees it that way, that's up to the court. I think generally they are manufactured as deadly weapons. This was being carried, I think, as a deadly weapon when it was loaded. And certainly, you know, that's what it was intended for.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. I don't believe I need any rebuttal unless there are any questions from the bench. I guess not. Thank you. Have a good morning.
Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We will take this matter under advisement, and you will be notified of our decision. Marsha, will you call a recess?